Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Today, I have a special part two interview with esoteric intuitive Gigi Young. Now, in part one, Gigi went into the Mars cult running transhumanism. In this episode, she'll go even deeper on the CERN Hadron Collider and the secret attempts to colonize another dimension, the occult Eighth Sphere, which Austrian mystic Rudolf Steiner wrote of extensively 100 years ago as a trap for humanity in the 21st century through technology.
So what CERN could be doing is could be in a non-precise way, just creating mass and coherence and just chaos, which is allowing the Earth to connect to the lower astral plane or the eighth sphere just by messing up its natural energy.
Please join us now. Can't get out of this interview, Gigi, without talking to you about how CERN was reactivated. And this is larger and, you know, bigger and badder, and it's got the coldest and the hottest spots there. You know, it's cold as space and hotter than the sun. There's been so many things. We did episodes on CERN when it was active previously, and we found out a lot about it. It had a $6 billion budget then. Now it has a $22 billion budget, which is astronomical for any kind of science project. It's more like a military means. And again, it's the particle collider at CERN that we're talking about, the Large Hadron Collider. So CERN, the organization, does all kinds of things, but it's the LHC. And originally they were looking for Higgs boson, and they said, we're going to find the God particle and how the Big Bang started. And now they're going a level deeper, and they're like, you know, we're looking for the hidden particle that will show us the key to humanity and all this. And so they always have some, you know, big trip to go out on. I know there's been a lot of superstition around CERN as well. However, as we've noted, there have been very unusual things around it. You know, the CERN tarot deck we got into, and I think you did a lot of reflecting on, which showed a lot of occult knowledge, a lot of knowledge of UFOs, a lot of knowledge of mystery schools, and a lot of knowledge of the past and the future. So CERN is a lot different than it's portrayed to the public. What is it with CERN reactivating? What kind of things are you seeing there in relation to the future in CERN?
Yeah, wow. So it was closed for 3 years?
Yeah.
Allegedly?
Yeah. And they had a secondary version of it set up called Alice.
Yes, there was an Alice.
Yeah.
So that's a secondary version. That's not, where is that one located?
That one goes from Geneva to France. And it is an incredibly long tunnel for smashing the particles. But, you know, the classic CERN is there in Switzerland, and it is this one that they made. The first one was pretty heavy duty, but I'll actually show a graph of the new one because it's pretty extensive. And the idea of all these cameras flashing, all these molecules smashing together, we heard scientists raise the original idea that maybe there might be environmental hazards that would happen because the magnetosphere seemed to dim whenever this thing was turned on. So whatever it is that's involved there, there's another layer. And certainly we understand scientific experiments and you know, we've seen those types of experiments around particle acceleration, but CERN's always been something weird. And we've seen those pictures of people having occult rituals there. And I think one of the things that we were able to get to was that there's an overlap from that old Orphic Circle idea. There's the clairvoyance and the reaching into the other side, and the Macy groups from the 1940s that got together and did the cybernetics. This is also another thread in that CERN development. So CERN kind of represents the sort of technology and the scientific activation of what was previously a kind of clairvoyant psychic process.
Yeah, it's sort of like it's the culmination of this. It's probably part of this group's religious beliefs, is to one day create a device that can thin the veil.
Right.
And that can actually bring entities here, allow certain communications to take place that you normally, again, would have to develop your character to have. These are all shortcuts, you know, and maybe even also change the vibrational frequency of the earth.
Yeah.
And sort of alter the energy of the earth, or alter the natural state, the natural condition of the earth. And in esoterica, it's kind of like either you're in harmony or you're not in harmony. And the closer you are to harmony and to balance, sort of the more connected with your inner Christ you are, the more connected you are, the more balanced you are. And then there's the idea of being off balance or unnatural. And that just means that basically you're more susceptible to what would be called darker forces because you're incoherent. So what CERN could be doing is could be in a non-precise way, just creating mass incoherence and just chaos, which is allowing the earth to connect to the lower astral plane or the eighth sphere just by messing up its natural energy. Because again, you don't necessarily have to be precise here. You just have to get it off balance and it'll automatically start referring into the lower worlds, because it's kind of something's either real or it's artificial.
Right.
In that sense. So it's kind of like they're just creating an artificial environment and then it can begin to connect into this darker planes and things like that. And then they could also be using it very precisely to actually contact beings. To maybe they could use it to affect dreams, to affect consciousness in certain ways. So it's a completely occult. It's a completely occult thing. I mean, it's almost like you could almost see it as like creating a, do they ever call it like a black sun?
Interesting. You know, they've discussed ideas of recreating how the sun was created.
Yeah. Because
so, yes,
it's a black, you know, it's like everybody talks about worshiping the black sun and the black sun and all that. And it's sort of like you're just creating one big black sun. There's like there's a white sun element and then there's a black sun element in creation. And the black sun isn't necessarily obviously evil, but it's the negative polarity of the sun. The sun can be seen in that way. And so there are forces on the planet who do worship they think that the black sun is the evolving sun, is the initiating sun, not the white sun.
Right.
The white light.
The whole Reich of the black sun.
Right. And that's a different, because then you hear about in mystery schools, like the masters of the white sun or the masters of the white light. Mm-hmm. The masculine, you know, exalted white sun element, which is the kind of like the lightning or the fire that initiates. And then there's sort of the black sun, which is actually funnily enough, it's more of a feminine sun that is just everything. It's kind of like the abyss. And we're not really initiated by the abyss. We're not really, you know, the abyss isn't really an initiating force in our life. It's actually the white sun that is the initiating force, because it's the exact information that's needed for the time. It's the exact time. It's the exact energy, whereas the abyss is everything. So there is a weird element to solar worship, actually, in very high occult schools, where there's a mixing up of the genders, even in solar essence, if you will. Thinking that the black sun can initiate the way that the white sun, it's perhaps this is a little bit of a challenging esoteric concept, but when I hear about looking for dark matter, when I hear about smashing particles together, I think about creating a womb, creating the abyss, and creating the black sun. And then you can kind of try to get whatever you want to appear from the abyss, appear from the black sun. That's what I believe.
So it's like manifestation.
It's like manifestation, but in order to do that, you have to create the abyss. You have to create a black sun force And then you try to be the white sun element that manifests whatever comes out of it. You try to be the light element that pulls from the abyss whatever you want. But the problem is we're not holy enough and pure enough to do that, because we are in a stage of development here that we have a lot to be healed and a lot to work on. So usually the initiating white sun force is their masters or their higher solar beings, like,
right,
like that. But they're not a solar being. They're not a white sun being. They're not a solar being. Mm-hmm. It's not a racial thing, by the way. This is like a purity of light, a kind of light, a kind of initiation. So they can't actually interact with a black sun like that. So it's sort of like a weird thing.
Yeah, absolutely. This reminds me of the Great White Brotherhood.
Exactly.
And this idea of ascended masters spreading this light throughout the planet. You know, this is fascinating though, Gigi, because when you look at some of the things, you've done so many shows on Atlantis and so much research around what that was and how that is in a way such a heavy suppressed aspect of our subconscious and memories of a culture where we were, you know, kind of super cosmic in that sense. It was a very psychic culture. It was a very advanced culture. And how the idea of the rediscovery of that culture, and this is brought up in everything from Anthroposophy to the Casey work, the reemergence of that idea. And of course, we see it in media, we see it in movies. But that actually, the real rediscovery of that heritage from Atlantis, in a sense, is a bigger or more explosive kind of disclosure than even UFO disclosure, because that's something that we are directly involved in.
Oh, yeah. Well said. Exactly. So the real secret, and this could also be why, you know, on your show, you focus so much in, you always remind people about the hot zone and this like intense desire to control what people think of that area that fell last, because maybe area that fell last will rise first,
right,
the order in which it fell. So it's sort of like there's this idea that there's this desire to control the hot zone, you know, and so that's really the control.
I want to say as a side note, if you were ever on Bimini, this would be like the network TV special of the alternative media, because I'm telling you, that's an explosive combination, your psychic ability and Bimini in its Atlantis overhang. Yeah, go ahead.
That would be fun.
You know, it's coming.
It's coming. But yeah, I think we have to look at it as something as sinister as, you know, hiding our own origins from us and our own evolution. Because once we go look at the Atlantis piece, we start to see that we are part of a evolutionary impulse on this planet, and that part of us as human beings is actually a much larger scope than we've ever believed. And when we zoom out that far, we actually understand our consciousness so much better. It's really hard to understand our soul and our consciousness and how we develop and where we came from if we're only looking at 6,000 years. It is like a blink, right? We have to back and understand, you know, like in Anthroposophy, the discussions about Lemuria, about the Lemurian epoch, the Atlantean epoch, the Hyperborean epoch, and the descent of man, and the formation of it even gets into the formation of planetary spheres and why. Just that knowledge alone would obliterate Mars mysteries.
Excellent point. Yeah,
just understanding what a planet is. And what a soul.
The cold aspect around Mars wouldn't stand up to that if we have it. Yes.
That's the biggest thing is that it's like, once you understand, you know, and Atlantis is kind of the higher sort of civilization we fell from. If we had that piece, we could understand how to redevelop it. And not even technologically, we would actually begin to access aspects of our own soul, aspects of our own memory that have been speaking to us all along, but that we didn't know how to place, we didn't know how to understand And so we've been missing ourselves. And a lot of what's happening in society is because we've actually been missing ourselves, mm-hmm. our true history, our true nature, and our true origins or how we really evolve in the cosmos. We've been missing that, and we've been seeking it outside of ourselves. And this idea of wiping us out from what happened in Atlantis and not having that story or even having creator gods and stuff like that, that is separating us from truly knowing how we work and truly understanding how the planet works.
Interesting. Absolutely. Well, what would that Atlantis awakening look like? It would totally shake us out of so much of this nonsense. One of the weird things that they're doing around Atlantis, I have no doubt, and we've seen in some of the sketchier groups, even the TTSA, that CIA overhang around UFO disclosure, they've tapped into this idea that, like, oh, there might be an undersea culture that's a threat to us, you know. So they've tried to extend that idea into, oh, like, you know, hey, ancient Atlanteans might be a threat. And in a lot of media articles that I've looked at, and you've sent me some really interesting ones where people, sometimes this is very funny, but when people go to criticize a league of thought, you know, that's super normal, they go like, oh, that's, you know, pseudoscience or whatever, they'll end up doing some of the best research around it.
I know.
I've heard of that, right? To critique it. But wow, it's like, wow, can't the good guys do this research? This is pretty good.
I know. Yeah.
So what's interesting is, but the media's had this thing lately, and I've been noticing this. This is over about 2 or 3 years now, where they keep lacing in the idea that if you are studying or interested in ancient Atlantis, you are some kind of elitist and you're, you know, racially insensitive and all these types of things. So they're trying to get that out there before it hits, before those discoveries are in, so that what they're cooking up with that weird woke narrative around things to box people's consciousness in can't be blown out by some discovery that gets brought to the fore. And of course, we've discussed the idea that they might bring a false discovery to mm-hmm. the fore in order to create a false impression of what that culture was all about.
I think so. It's really interesting. And they must be exhausted from floating all of these potential operations all the time. I did have one afternoon where I totally completely saw, it was like I was in a room and I was overhearing a conversation. I was just on my couch minding my own business. And then I was like pulled into this conversation of people talking about how it may not rise on time or things may not happen naturally on time. And there's all these things lined up. And so, what we could do was, create a false rising of Atlantis. And then there were these different ways in which it could happen. Like, we will create a hurricane or like a natural disaster, and we'll cordon the area off and we'll say that there's something that's here, no one can go in, and then we can move in and create, like, we discovered Atlantis because of a natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were also, you know, finding things in deep sea or whatever, but there were all these things about, you know, what if Atlantis, what if our timing is wrong? And it very well eventually will be wrong, because you can't understand time correctly unless you're completely in balance with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they could maybe have a wrong time. It is possible. It's possible for anyone. But how do we get it into, how do we get to do our operation? And of course, that's, you know, fake rising. So that's definitely possible. And then also associating Atlantis with, you know, like white supremacy or Nazis or whatever is another way as well. But then there's always the thing that's in your back pocket, which is like, we'll discover ruins or bones, and then we'll use science to prove it also.
I think that this, see, here's the thing. You're zoning in on their plan before their plan. That's why I think you have those afternoons where you get those impressions, because this makes a lot of sense to me, because that is exactly what they would try to do. They've done it so much with the phony Tic Tac video.
Yes.
Which, I mean, and that's really flimsy stuff. That was on YouTube in 2007.
Right.
I mean, so this, they'll take anything and use it like, oh, you know, he handed it to me in a secret garage and pretend it's like a deep throat. Yeah, Watergate. Come on.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, this is the best footage we have. And it's just, they want to create that impulse and control the narrative from whatever little impulse they create. They can't have it happen naturally. They can't have it be something organic, because then the seeds of truth would be in it.
Yes.
Ritualistically, right? So.
Wow, I love that. Seeds of truth. I had something. It's so weird that you said seeds of truth. since we're talking about seeds and DNA, the last time I mentioned a company called LifeShip, and the story gets even stranger. There's just all kinds of esoteric imagery. They are sending to the moon in a pyramid these very unusual DNA samples. And the idea is they want a kind of Noah's Ark of all these seeds of humanity in this pyramid. And guess what, Gigi? You can sign up to have your DNA placed on the moon too. But this is also, they are partnering up with Musk in a SpaceX routine to get this pyramid of DNA on the moon. And that, with the whole Noah's Ark overlay, and then starting to think about Elon saying, we need to make sure we protect and project the light of consciousness to Mars to save it, just in case we blow ourselves up here on Earth. Where does this Noah's Ark seed aspect involving the moon and Mars?
Well, that's definitely right in line with what we've been talking about with the Mars origin story, where they're obsessed with DNA, they're obsessed with genetics, they love yes. the pyramid too. You know, they like that as well. Yeah. They're into it. So that's definitely something that seems ritualistically like what they would do. Just from what we know about their obsession with like thinking that genetics is like the basis of everything. Also, the first thing that sort of popped into my mind when you were saying it was that the pyramid would create kind of like a field of energy around the planet. Based in the DNA that was there. So it's kind of like creating a collective consciousness.
Interesting.
A collective consciousness field, and that maybe if your DNA is on the planet through spooky action, you can now connect with Mars or our moon, and you can now have your consciousness be in a direct ping with the moon and everything that that spiritually represents. And it may expand your energy body to the moon and allow you to be able to get through or connect with certain things. But if there's a piece of you there, there's a lot of occult things that can happen if there's literally a piece of you on another planet. Like there's a lot of, you know, you're allowed to, you can ping with it, you know? One of the things that is huge in the dark occult, and I talk about this in my Mad Scientist of Atlantis video, is that DNA is a magical thing for these dark groups. And they actually use DNA to summon different entities. So by creating a chimera, you actually summon an entity that is associated with that animal or that consciousness in a parallel universe or in another time. And you get that wisdom from it. And so they use DNA as a magical practice, because DNA has a transcendental quality, the ability to open portals, the ability to use it psychically. It has an effect. It's directly connected to our consciousness. And it is all of our kind of DNA here together, all of ourness that creates the collective consciousness. So you could easily be creating a kind of collective consciousness around the moon. So
interesting. Gigi, over and over again, it's the moon that seems to be the target of so much of this. Even the whole experiment about going to Mars requires they set up a station on the moon to use as a launch point to Mars. And we've seen weird things in relation to the original story about going to the moon, and that there were things that were, let's say, at least left out.
Yes.
And then come 1972... 50 years, nobody goes back to the moon. There's no manned mission for 50 years, five decades. Nobody could even imagine that. So we have the technology in the late 60s to go to the moon, and then, so we all know, and we've studied and talked about the secret space program, et cetera. But something again about the moon and DNA And, you know, even when Trump gets into office, they make a plan. We're going back to the moon in 2024. And then Stepford Biden gets in with Harris and they're like, no, we're not going to, maybe by 2030, but, you know, we'll talk to you about it. So again, we have this weird moves around the moon. In the meantime, countries like China are sending, you know, all of these probes to the dark side of the moon. Musk has his situation set up to go to the moon. Blue Origin wants to go there. These guys and their Noah's Ark vault. The moon seems to be pivotal in the middle of all this.
It is. It is really pivotal. It's, I think, the only way that we can honestly understand the moon and really any other planet is we have to go back to the mystery schools and we have to understand what they mean to us. So the moon, so like, because when we understand that esoteric information is really just describing how a planet processes energy, and energy is very real, and every planet processes energy differently and has a different spiritual connection to human beings. Every human being has a different relationship with each planet, and aspects of themselves are essentially stored in each planet and the planetary field that that planet emits. So there's a piece of us already on Moon. There's a piece of us already on Mars, on Jupiter, and on Venus. It's part of our purpose as human beings to take various different mergings or sojourns, as Casey would say, on these various different planetary spheres where we receive initiations and consolidate things, awakenings, and then we come back on the earth and we integrate it all. So when we know this, and that like every, like the moon represents something, that we can kind of understand why they would be doing this. The moon is like a, the moon is a very dense sphere compared to the other spheres for us. The best, the quickest thing I could probably say about the moon is that the moon can act like a bit of a lock around the planet. It's not negative, but it's a mirror. So you were talking the other day about how the moon helps us see Lucifer.
Yes.
And so the only way we can ever truly understand Lucifer is if we understand the Luciferic spirits within ourselves, or the Luciferic energies within ourselves. And only when we know thyself can we get beyond it, but can we get beyond the moon? So the moon is like a giant mirror. And it also contains a prior phase of humanity in it, kind of like unsolved, kind of like a unsolved karma or prior phase of humanity. So there's kind of, it's kind of like baggage. One day the moon will be reabsorbed into the planetary consciousness and we'll overcome that. But the planets are holding all this information for us, but the moon in particular can either be an amazing initiatory force if we use it correctly, because we can use it to feel and sense where we are out of balance, right? Even the moon even helps us keep rhythm here, right?
Yeah.
And so we can see where we're imbalanced if we use it correctly, but if we don't use it correctly, we can try to dominate the moon and think that by changing the moon or controlling the moon that you can get off this planet.
Interesting.
So it's sort of like, again, there are people who misunderstand the esoterica of the moon, and they think that this planet is a prison planet because the moon is here. And there's been many, many forces who have taken the moon, which is a natural object. And I understand that is a controversial opinion, but it's a natural object that has been altered because people are trying to get through it without having to go through that personal change, the growth. So the moon creates an actual field that scatters or locks people in unless you evolve, unless you spiritually evolve. And so there are forces that want to use, surprise, surprise, technologies, and they're inhuman forces, and they try to use these technologies to hollow out the moon or do these various steps to the moon for thousands of years because they want to get through, but they don't want to do the work.
Interesting. This is really fascinating because it seems like the whole idea about creating this grid in space to control things on the ground here, the moon is almost like headquarters.
That's how I see it. That's exactly it. It is part of a spiritual, it's part of like a spiritual net, and it works with other planetary spheres that function on a higher dimensional plane, like Saturn. Mm-hmm. Saturn and Moon work in conjunction with each other, but they're fundamentally based in a different plane, but those planes link together. Key together, and this is how planets actually work to get into other times and other things. You have to get keys right. So,
if they, we've had some strange things about the moon. I'm going to mention two psychics here. One of them is Ingo Swann, and we talked about his unusual mission, where he was grabbed by one of these intel groups. But this is a weird one because a lot of them were twins.
Okay.
And they took him in and they said, this is a special mission. We have to put a bag over your head and take you to a secret location to do this one. And they couldn't tell him the mission. And then when he got there, he noticed that the driver and the person who took him in had exactly the same features. So they were these kind of tall Aryan twins. And so he gets into this remote viewing situation. He realizes what they want him to do. And he says, oh, you have me remote viewing the moon with those coordinates. And they're like, please just tell us what you see. And he saw a large scale human development of people putting things together, large towers, construction, and things of this nature. And then at a certain point, they become aware of him telepathically. And he becomes afraid, and the person who's leading the session says, get out of there, get out of there.
Oh my God, they're dying.
Right. Well, you have to imagine, like, you know, how spooked he must have been at that point. He had a lot of weird remote viewing, but I don't think he ever had a time when the actual telepaths turned on him, you know. So, you know, it's interesting commentary. That's his vision. It's his thing that he put on the record. We don't know if it's true. However, there's been a lot of unusual things about part of the problem with the moon landings is that when they got there, there were ruins, and that this is a big problem, and that this is a lot of the cover-up around the moon. What I want to ask you is, when we hear people like Steiner talk about moon beings, and we hear Casey saying, well, you had a life there on the moon, do you think then that they are adopting some kind of a human body for interaction and working on the moon? Or is it that we suited up the moon bodies to become human? Speaking cosmologically, esoterically, yeah. But when you look at somebody like Swann, he's seeing people up there doing things. What do you think of that?
It's really interesting because we're looking at, we have to know that we're sort of, we look at the different planets, we have to understand that there is sort of a natural path of evolution and natural connection with planets, where a planet will have a point where it comes to life and it will get a kind of plant, mineral kingdom, plant kingdom, animal kingdom, and humans, various different kinds of humans that will come onto it. It'll come on very natural. In fact, everything already exists within that planet. The moment it materializes, everything of that planet's life is already in that planet, including the beings that represent the sphere. So everything's already done, and it just kind of enters, almost like enters time and stretches out and begins to express itself, just like we do from a child to an adult. And that's what a planet does. And so there are natural moon beings. There's natural beings in various different celestial bodies that have a natural life path, just like the planet is expressing itself in a natural way that is completely of God, that's completely of an order that we couldn't even understand. Mm-hmm. Then there's this divergent path of human beings in the cosmos that mainly manifests as a lower astral phenomenon, so encompassing more of like an eighth sphere sort of vibe, that don't go into the higher realms at all. And they sort of would be kind of similar to the idea of like archons or something, but not really. Mm-hmm. And this divergent path of human beings they will go onto a physical planet and try to do various things to it, control it, colonize it. And they're completely oblivious to this natural element that's going on within the planet and within the universe. And so they kind of go on there and they think that if they use this kind of technology, they can make it come to life. Or if I explode a nuclear bomb, then Mars is going to come to life, or that something will happen on the moon, that they are sort of the impetus for all creation.
Oh. They
can get the moon going, that they can take over the technologies that existed on the moon, that they can take over certain technologies and ruins that exist on various different spheres in our solar system. And all they need is the right scientific information, or all they need is the right DNA or the right time window. That's all they need, is for the right thing to come along and that they can get it all going.
Wow.
And it's a delusion, because every planetary sphere, if you look at the traditional mysteries, every planetary sphere is like a being in itself. And so you're going to have Venusian beings that are not earthlings. They have a human form, but they are a representation of Venus fundamentally. And then you're going to have beings that are associated with moon and its various stages of representation. We were a moon being before the moon, you know, the moon separated, right? So there's this beautiful alchemy, planetary human alchemy that goes on with forms forming and disappearing in the cosmos. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's a beautiful kind of spirituality, cosmic spirituality. It's completely sad and empty and dark that we're talking about technologies on the moon and alien gods. And it's so weird and dark compared to what our genuine heritage is as human spiritual beings, cosmic beings. But in other words, there's all kinds of genetic manipulation that has happened. Atlantis fell like 11,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. And genetic manipulations from that era, from before that. What is an alien? How do we know that these, you know, Nordic people that sometimes appear are genuine Pleiadians or Venusians? They could easily be some kind of genetic manipulation, because it's been going on for thousands and thousands of years. And the only way to discern what an alien genuinely is certainly not physically by looking at it. You've got to be able to read its energy, or you just don't know what you're dealing with. And that's just the reality. It's the same thing with people. You can't tell someone necessarily by looking at them whether they're a psychopath. You've got to feel the energy. And that's the same thing, but, you know, not to go too into length about cosmic, you know.
Good. It's absolutely. I mean, this is a really well-rounded answer, because you're up there in the stratosphere with the cosmic part and then bringing it right down. You know, I've noticed before that you've mentioned the Nordic type aliens in this way. You seem to have kind of special insight there, that's been abused at times.
Yes. My first spiritual experience was with beings that were Pleiadian, and they introduced themselves as Pleiadian. And they weren't like super Nordic looking, like some of the things that I see. They just looked like very tall human beings that had like a beautiful aura around them, but they were in no means like Aryan perfect or anything like that. They were just like very tall humans that had a much larger form than me. And so that really sort of threw me for a loop, because all of spirituality was like totally not in the cosmic stuff at all. I thought I was crazy. And then I got really into the New Age stuff, because that was the only place that could mirror what I had gone through. Right. And so I had to I took a lot of that information on, because there's just nothing else. And I had no idea what was going on. But then when I got older, when I turned around 30 going into 33, I got even deeper contacts with similar beings that were robed men. And I realized that I had misunderstood what my experience was, partially, in that when an entity or when a being comes to you and says, I am from this star system, or I am associated with this star system, they are telling you their level of initiation in the cosmos.
Mm.
The time and density that they are from, because they understand that Earth is an aspect of themselves. So they're kind of telling you what aspect of humanity they are, or what aspect of the Earth's evolution they are. And eventually human beings can reach certain levels of initiation where they can begin to embody the Pleiades star system and the wisdom that is there, and it comes into their human form. And so they were actually telling me a certain secret. They were actually telling me a certain secret, not about aliens, but about human and planetary evolution. They were speaking to me as though I already understood something that I didn't. They were speaking to me as though I already understood everything. And it was very interesting. And then I started to realize, you know, they're like, no, no, this is, that's not what that is. I was like, you know, like, no. And then, you know, it's like, the stars and the planets are initiating bodies for the soul. And so when someone is associating with a certain star system, like that's a certain time and that's a certain level of initiation. And then it all made sense to me that we've been, including myself, literalizing certain things that are fundamentally spiritual.
Oh.
Misunderstanding ancient mystery traditions that were probably deeply part of Atlantis when Atlantis was in contact with other star systems and other worlds. You know, as I mentioned earlier, like in Atlantis, we knew that these were different aspects of ourselves and that the cosmos was interrelated, separated only by certain times, and that certain windows would open at certain times and close, and that the Earth formed as a direct extension of certain stars moving down in density. And there's this whole thing that we're just missing and over literalizing it. And when we over materialize and over literalize, we click into that divergent timeline of going to the moon and dominating it and thinking that we're gonna, you know, activate some interplanetary. There's an interplanetary system as well that's made of monoliths and pyramids. Mm. And it's ancient. It's from Atlantis. We have them here on this planet as well, but they exist on various different moons and various different spheres in the cosmos. And there's a great desire to get control of that system. It's a psychic system, but it's also an electrical system. Mm. And so there's a desire. And you need, the funny thing is to access that system properly, you need a kind of DNA.
Fascinating.
So,
what kind of DNA?
You have to have a, well, it's even a kind of a mystery to me, to be honest with you. But what I've been shown and what I've seen is that there's a certain level where the people who have all of this advanced technology that they've looted from temple cultures or tried to put together from ancient times is that they've kind of reached this dead end with it, mm-hmm. because it functions beyond pure physical, mechanical, pure physical, mechanical things. There's a level of it where it becomes a psychic technology, where you really start getting into this other, like you would call apothium,
mm-hmm.
X series, that X technology. When you get into that, you have to have a certain level of spiritual development.
In order to operate it.
And in order to operate it precisely. Otherwise, it will literally drive you crazy, mm-hmm. or it will destroy you. So the only way that I can interpret that I know at this time, is that there were higher beings who have that associated with them. And they're the only ones that can really use it or control it.
Mm.
Fundamentally, they're the only ones that can, because they almost... our response, like we can play with it, but there's a level of it where they can't get beyond a certain point. And that is incredibly frustrating. But they did find out that if they use certain genetic markers, that by following certain bloodlines, that for some reason they can get a little bit further, a little bit further. And so that is why I also think that part of space recruitment and trying to get people to Mars or trying to get people to the moon is because they're really at a dead end in regards to advanced technology, because it does require the individual to be able to have certain cosmic memories accessible to them, certain pathways developed. Like an Edgar Cayce or something is going to be able to use a machine differently than somebody because of the connections. So it's all technology like that turns into a psychic event.
Right. So if you bring like a basic pilot in for, say, UFO technology, for example, it's just one. This guy, you know, they can train him, but unless he's on a certain level energetically, it's not going to happen.
It's going to get to a point where it just won't work.
It's not a physical skill.
It's not a physical skill. It's something deeper. It's something deeper. It's in the soul of the individual. And it may even be connected to time as well. It may also be locked in time. We may not get a high enough density for it as well. All I know is that it depends on the individual. Potentially time. There could be other elements that I don't understand, but I definitely know that it's like sometimes when you talk about time travel or these amazing technologies, there's this feeling that we get like, oh my gosh, they're basically like gods. Right. And what are we going to do? Like they can travel anywhere they want in time, and they can use all these technologies. Like they're watching me all the time. And you can get into this like frenzy of paranoia because they have all this technology. But it's really important to remember that we are fundamentally spiritual beings, and that everything is fundamentally going to return to the initial spiritual pattern in which it was created. And that you can't get very far unless you are spiritually developed, and that includes technology. And just because you have the technology doesn't mean that you can use it. So we have to be aware of it, but not paranoid.
Interesting. Oh my God. You see, the paranoia goes right over the cliff.
And I get it.
Yeah. But you know, this is interesting to me, and I guess the way we can kind of round all this out is by taking you into a subject you know very well and have discussed, but is always such a great mystery, which is the eighth sphere.
Yes.
And the eighth sphere is so telling for this period of time. Of course, Steiner discussed it at length to correct things that came out about it in A.P. Sinnott's work for Theosophy, where they try to compare the eighth sphere to the moon. And by opening it up and saying, well, the eighth sphere is actually the biggest secret of the mystery schools, Steiner got into it in some interesting ways when you look at it from a 21st century angle, because what he was saying basically is a kind of virtual reality realm where things in there disappear once they're projected into it, and that the idea of so much of this manipulation of an harmonic nature through the culture is to project these people unknowingly into this mysterious idea of the eighth sphere, which again is not meant to be an actual physical body, but it is the development of a physical etheric, shape in consciousness out there, so closely aligned with the Earth. And that the idea that the moon was the eighth sphere was wrong, because the moon was actually beneficial, and that the eighth sphere was a trap. Gigi, how does all this, in getting deep on the cosmos aspect and then looking at the human occult interference and then the technological interference of sucking people into, even Twitter is kind of an eighth sphere type device. It certainly is used that way. But I would think something like metaverse, that's pretty close. That's getting pretty close to it.
I mean, that's pretty literal.
Yeah.
You know, the metaverse is literally like, put your virtual reality goggles on and your 3D life fades away. and you don't need it anymore. You just, why don't you just play poker with a robot? You're gonna, it's gonna be great. And it's like a weird cartoon reality too.
Mm-hmm.
This is so bizarre. Yeah. So like who wants that? Like, am I 8 years old? Like,
you can be Mark Zuckerberg's friend in the metaverse.
No, it's I think that like when you hear about these things, you think that they're going to be maybe more convincing than when they actually come about. It shows how difficult it is.
Yes.
But there's this idea in the mysteries too about the formation of worlds and how when we come to like an ending point, energy is consolidated in either direction, either natural or unnatural, kind of like an initiation. And then that energy is sort of absorbed into another sphere. And this happens all the time. The moon in itself kind of happens that way, in the sense that it's separated from the earth, to contain certain energies. And every planet forms in the lower dimensions as a way, as a reservoir for energies and for a certain kind of development to carry on and continue, but as a reflection of a higher sphere that is more complete, if you will. Like that for us, that would be Venus, or mm-hmm. or maybe even in a sense, the sun. So there is this idea of worlds forming, and that's completely natural. That's completely normal. But this is something that is happening from the third dimension. And so we, at this point, are supposed to rise. We're supposed to begin to ascend. We're supposed to, you know, Christ gave us an initiation that allowed us to turn inward. So now we have this eye, and now we now the kingdom of heaven is within. And so now that the kingdom of heaven is within, we can begin to return into those heavenly, more higher spheres of the earth, if you will. But this is something different. This is an alternative sphere that's being formed to kind of absorb what's unnatural.
Mm.
And how that's manifesting at such a low, intense dimension where we are now, where everything's so material, is through a lot of virtual reality. Kind of, it's associated with transhumanism, and almost becoming too dense, too heavy. Because remember, we're supposed to be moving upwards now. We're supposed to be beginning our ascent, and are slowly, but we're supposed to be kind of going upwards now after Christ. We're supposed to be coming back up in the cosmic sphere of human evolution. And this is a downward move. This is kind of like getting heavier, getting denser. And it doesn't really have anything to do with the moon other than that every sphere that's created, even if it's an artificial sphere, is going to have a history multidimensionally, in the sense that it's going to gently reference the planets that went into its creation. So it will gently reference the moon.
Mm-hmm.
It'll gently reference Saturn. It'll gently reference the Earth. And every planet is essentially holding a different vibrational frequency that creates like a chain. So planets are actually chains. They're not really... You can't really view something as individually.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an evolutionary chain. That's the best possible way you could ever view a planet, is like, how did it get to be what it is? And it's the same thing with the eighth sphere, right? Is that the eighth sphere, you can look at an individual force and you can say, you know, Lucifer and Ahriman are the forces that lead to that sphere's creation. And you can look at all the details. But then, you know, you can also see that the moon is also part of it, and so is Saturn, and so is some other forces, but that's not what the eighth sphere is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the eighth sphere holds shape.
Mm-hmm.
Because if time doesn't exist, then it...
Interesting.
And it's helping it, because everything is more of a chain, really, and so AP Sinnet probably saw, because even if you look at it clairvoyantly, you may see the moon very closely related to the earth in the eighth sphere, but just because it's the fourth dimension, it's so associated, it's so close, but it doesn't mean that it's the moon. But it's definitely overlaid, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the way Steiner talked about it, it's this enveloping condition on Earth. And so I guess the question for you would be, how does one stay out of the eighth sphere?
Yes, well, I know it's funny because I've noticed a lot of people making comments like they can't hold a thought anymore. Like they'll walk into the room and they'll be like, "What was I getting a pair of scissors or what? Like, what was I doing? Why did I come into the room?" And like they're starting to kind of lose the memory a little bit, at, or an inability to focus. And
Fascinating.
yeah, this
Yes.
distraction, being distracted. And that's what we have to look out for, because the eight sphere is very much like a mental plane. I always personally associate it with the lower astral plane, and sort of like the energies that are within the lower astral plane will consolidate into a sphere. And there are, it's already, you can visualize it as surrounding the earth and then the moon sort of on top of it or wherever. But it really kind of works on the mind. And it's really important that you're not fully, you're, it's kind of like they want you to be distracted, not alert. And I really think that you just did a show on Gurdjieff. And I really feel like something like the Gurdjieff work, it came about at that time to get people in their bodies and to get people understanding that there is spiritual value in doing something very mundane with intense focus, because it's actually that intense focus in our mundane actions, like doing the dishes or vacuuming or whatever you're doing, that keeps you balanced, that keeps you in your body. The eighth sphere is all about drawing you out of your body through fantasy, through imagination, through video games. And then when you're outside of your body, you're not in balance anymore. Technically, you're not in your body. And that's where your energy can kind of be, as Steiner would say, wrested away from you. Because we're always generating energy all the time. And so if that's not, if we're not in our body, we're not using that energy to rejuvenate ourselves and to develop ourselves. It's kind of like,
Oh, this is fascinating, Gigi. So if I'm paying attention, even at a mundane task, I'm creating energies.
Oh yeah, you definitely are, but you're refocusing those energies in your own, you're sort of recirculating those energies within your own being, with for your own mind, for your own development, if you will. And we're always emitting chi, we're always emitting prana, we're always generating it. And the whole thing about a lot of myths, even the Eastern mysteries, were all about like lock the gates in yoga, lock your three gates, seal it up, and keep your focus. And it was something that was more natural even a few hundred years ago. And we've been slowly watching television, video games, Twitter, and we've been slowly outside of our bodies, I think more than our ancestors could have ever imagined, as they do hard labor in the field and whatever they're doing. But really the key is to be in our body. Because when we're outside of our body, we're really not rooted, and we're sort of emitting energy in a weird way that I think can be used or rested into other places.
Oh, absolutely fascinating. That is the grounding. It's the focus. Somehow the focus brings all of our spiritual kind of what's lying there latent.
Yes, it's the difference between someone who's coming to spirituality to escape their
Right.
body. And this is where we have to get real honest with ourselves, everyone. We're all guilty of this. We're all guilty of this, of using spirituality. Using spirituality as a way to enter fantasy and escape from our bodies.
Yes.
And we think that we're escaping from our pain and our trauma, and we think that we're escaping from boredom, we're escaping from responsive, we think that we're healing or something, but really we're escaping. And we have to use spirituality. We have to be honest and understand that if we really want to develop spiritually, we have to bring the spirit deeply in the body. And this is why the Western mysteries are so beautiful, is because it's all about, you don't really think that the whole world is Maya in the Western tradition. Where I think that sometimes in the Eastern traditions, the 3D world is all Maya and illusion, and it's okay to kind of abandon yourself in fantasy or abandon yourself in just thoughts, because it doesn't matter, because the 3D world is illusion. Or then when you get into the Western mysteries, there's, you know, the 3D world is a direct reflection of the spirit world, and it's an opportunity to work your spirit into your body. And it's not about escaping, it's about being very deeply in there, to the point that you feel Christ consciousness in everything that you do. Every mundane task becomes graceful. Every mundane thing that you do becomes a ritual. The way that you make your bed becomes, in a sense, a beautiful act. The way that you do everything becomes full of grace, or full of reverence for God. And that's when everything changes, when we stop thinking that our mundane life is something to be avoided and escape from, and make it something holy. That's why we're here at this time. And that's what keeps us integrated. And we also can't be manipulated very easily when we're like that as well.
Absolutely fascinating. Gigi, incredible.
Just absolutely fascinating. We'll have you back shortly, because we're working on something very special that everyone will find interesting coming up. Of course, all of Gigi's work is available at gigiyoung.com and her groundbreaking series on the Mars Mysteries on YouTube. Remember to sign up at darkjournalist.com for our newsletter, and join us here on Friday nights for the X series. See you soon.